We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's 7:07 right here on WCCO Radio. I'm your host, Shaletta Brundage, with my friend Jonathan Lowe for the Shaletta Show. Usually we kick things off trying to be as lighthearted as possible, wanting to put a smile on your face. It's the weekend. Y'all know me. I love to laugh and, you know, send folks off with a smile. But tonight my heart is heavy. As soon as I got off the air with Henry Lake last night, I saw the tweet that Congressman John Lewis had passed away from pancreatic cancer. He was an activist, and now he is an ancestor. And I'm going to try to do this show without crying, but I cannot guarantee that because he was very close to my family. My husband's cousin is married to his brother. He's been to my husband's family reunions. He is from Troy, Alabama, was born in Troy, Alabama, like my father-in-law, who is downstairs, who is 83 years old, who knows him well. He was 80, so they grew up together. We had to go downstairs and break the news to Papa B that his old playmate that he grew up with down in Troy, Alabama, had died. Atlanta is mourning. Hundreds, thousands of people are flocking to a mural in his honor. Alabama is in mourning, and the nation is in mourning. You heard Mark Fry talk about the governor and what he had to say. I know that the last election, the last presidential election, I was standing in line. And here in Cottage Grove, in the school gym, and I had my kids with me because I always take my kids with me when I vote because I need them to see that. And I looked around and I thought about the fact that there were no dogs barking at me, that the white people standing in front of me and behind me weren't threatening me, that there was no Bull Connor outside trying to keep me from voting, and that my house wouldn't be torched, there wouldn't be a cross in front of it, and that my children would not be harmed because I was casting my ballot for the President of the United States. And the reason that I could stand there safely, and the reason that I could cast my ballot, and the reason that I could make my voice heard, is because of John Lewis and his bravery and his sacrifice and his leadership in this country. We should never, ever forget it. We should never, ever take it for granted. His passion for voting, his passion for equality, his passion for unity, it lives in me. It lives in my children. It lives in all of us. And I am so honored tonight to have from the University of St. Thomas somebody who understands the legacy of this great ancestor as well as I do, Dr. Uhuru Williams. Thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show tonight. Dr. Williams, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you so much for being on the show. What was your reaction when you found out that this activist now
You know, I was really saddened, primarily because I've had an opportunity over the last few years to get to know Congressman Lewis through my work with New York City educators and young people around the trilogy series that he published with an author and illustrator about his life as an activist during the civil rights movement.
Yes.
And he was a gentle giant. I think when we sometimes think about the heroes who spearheaded those momentous marches and those protests of the 1950s and 1960s, they somehow seem larger than life. And yet, John Lewis, as you said in your intro, was very human, very reachable. Someone who, you know, really took the time. I remember in 2017 being on a program with him, and he remembered my name, which surprised me because I'm sure he met thousands of people in the course of a week just through his various activities. But that's who he was. He just was genuinely a beautiful human being. We didn't just lose a great leader. We didn't just lose a great spokesperson for civil rights. We didn't just lose someone who was committed to social justice. We lost a great human being yesterday.
Now, you've written several books about African-American and politics, Black politics, white power, civil rights, Black power, Black Panthers in New Haven, Rethinking the Black Freedom Movement. In your studies of Congressman John Lewis, what's the one thing that you remember most about him?
Shaletta, I'm sorry, I lost the last part of your question.
What's the one thing that you remember most about him?
You know, for me, I think what stands out most people think about the Edmund Pettus Bridge and his courageous actions on that day, on Bloody Sunday, when he was beaten by the Alabama State Police, you know, marching for the what would have ultimately become the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Others remember, you know, finally his speech that he delivered at the March on Washington in 1963. He was the youngest speaker to speak that day. He actually had his speech edited because it was the most militant of that day. He had in that speech a passage which read, "If our civil rights are not granted to us, we will march through the South the way Sherman did." So, you know, today when we celebrate kind of militant civil rights, John Lewis was clearly the model of what that looked like. But for me, I think the moment that best exemplifies his dignity and grace as a human being and as a leader is when he was maneuvered out of the leadership position within the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. That organization had increasingly become more militant and turned toward Black power, as articulated by Stokely Carmichael. And John Lewis, in the eyes of many of those who wanted to go in that direction, represented a much more conservative civil rights, more akin to what the Reverend Dr. King was preaching. And so there was essentially what John Lewis would later describe as a coup, where he was maneuvered out of leadership. That did not in any way sour him on the movement, nor did it sour him on any of his colleagues within SNCC. And that, again, speaks to who he was as a human being. You know, here he was in the midst of this momentous struggle, and he could see beyond the petty politics and squabbling, political disagreements, to understand at the end of the day, the ultimate prize was winning full equality for African Americans in this country.
Now, tell me this, because what I remember most with everything that he's done, how he was beaten, how he sat in, how he worked, how he was grassroots before we knew what grassroots was, right? How he organized young people and got them to do amazing things. How he was so eloquent and he was never afraid. But the thing that I remember most is that in the fight for his life, when pancreatic cancer was taking over his body, he still showed up for a march. What did that mean? What did that signal to the next generation of freedom fighters?
You know, it's one of the things that I love about him, because even when I saw him last November, he was just, I saw him the Monday after Thanksgiving, and I think the announcement about him battling pancreatic cancer came shortly thereafter. And so he was looking frail and thin, and yet he stood up in front of the students that day at the New York Historical Society, and in his typical fashion inspired them through the force of his own example to think about ways they could have an impact in their community starting now. And he talked about joining the movement at a very young age and being inspired at a very young age to want to do something greater for his people. He was always humorous, so he told them about, you know, his desire at one point to be a preacher and how he preached to the chickens to prepare for that work. But then when he turned serious, I mean, part of what he really wanted them to understand is that freedom is a lifelong struggle. You can't enter the movement at one point and assume that that work is ever done. But what's so powerful about his example is that he lived that. So from the moment he activated and joined the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, got involved with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, we never saw him deviate from that path. And we saw him show up, you know, I can just talk about the last decade. One of the first congressmen to come out in support of Black Lives Matter, Congressman John Lewis, one of the first congressmen to articulate concern about Black lives in the aftermath of Trayvon Martin, Congressman John Lewis, the first congressman to eloquently dissent from the Supreme Court's disastrous ruling in Shelby County versus Holder 2013, Congressman John Lewis, the first congressman to actively come out and challenge President Trump on the Muslim ban, Congressman John Lewis. So this is a life, and that's just the last decade. When we get into the 90s and 80s and talk about his stand on South Africa and divestment, we talk about his push for immigration reform and him actually advocating on behalf of the Dreamers. This was someone who was deeply committed to social justice and never wavered from that cause. And it was a life of humble service for justice. That's what we could take away from him. We celebrate youth activism, but at the end of the day, it's lifelong activism which he modeled.
Now, we're going to take a quick break, but I'm going to keep you around because I want to talk to you and find out from you why you think he stayed connected to the youth. So many of our politicians get to a certain age and they're busy legislating and making laws and doing things in Congress or at the state level or even at the city level, at the county level. But somehow, John Lewis was able to stay connected to our young people. When we come back, I'm going to continue my conversation with Dr. Uhuru Williams from University of St. Thomas as we pay tribute to our amazing activist, a great American hero, now our ancestor, Congressman John Lewis. We'll be right back. It's 7:21. You're listening to The Shaletta Show on WCCO Radio. Thank you so much for being part of tonight's broadcast. We are paying tribute to an amazing activist, an American hero, and now an ancestor, Congressman John Lewis. And to help me do that, I've got Dr. Uhuru Williams from the University of St. Thomas. And we were talking earlier about his connection to young people. Why do you think it was so important for him to stay connected to the youth of this country?
I think, Shaletta, because it was his entree to the movement. He did so at a time. I love this story. He talks about it in Walking with the Wind and its representative march and reaching out to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who accepted him into the movement at a very young age. And so he saw the power in that moment of two things, the power of youthful exuberance and what you could channel if given the opportunity. If you give young people the opportunity to be active, they'll live up to your expectations. But secondly, the fact that Dr. King believed in him and gave him that opportunity. And what you see with Congressman Lewis throughout his life is him offering that same opportunity to junior politicians, to young people, to young activists. He was always somebody who approached you with open arms and the spirit of mentorship because that's what he learned and that's what he modeled. And I celebrate, in some sense, those individuals who were mentors to him because clearly that's the circle that he helped to extend even into this moment. I think one of the great things we can do to honor him is to continue that type of bonding in our community in particular and recognizing, as you pointed out, the importance of ancestors, not after they pass, but when they're here and what knowledge they can share.
You know, one thing that struck me and on the very first episode of this show was how young people, white and black, are coming together for George Floyd's legacy to create a movement from his murder. And I've seen 16, 17, 18 year olds organizing in Shoreview and Plymouth and Cottage Grove, doing amazing things on their own and on social media without the intervention of adults. And the reason I believe Dr. Williams is because the only way we're going to be successful is if our struggle, if our movement, if our power is intergenerational. If we lift those young people up and give them an opportunity. And I was talking to Greta Bay, one of my Facebook friends. She and her husband went to one of the marches, and you know, she encouraged those young people. She complimented them. She made sure she shouted them out on social media. How important, looking forward, is it that we do like Representative John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, and lift these young people up so that the struggle, the fight for freedom will continue after he is gone?
I think it's absolutely essential, and it's essential for three reasons. The first is because, as you pointed out, and this is so important, all struggles, successful struggles for social justice in our history have been intergenerational. We sometimes think about the civil rights movement, for example, as a movement spearheaded by young people, when in fact, if you look at the Freedom Riders, that first ride, there were white and black freedom riders from every different generation represented.
Yes.
I believe
yes.
the oldest rider was in his 60s. And, you know, John Lewis was beaten on the Freedom Rides along with a young white gentleman named Jim Zwirk, who had his teeth knocked out and was hospitalized mm-hmm. because of mm-hmm. the severity of that beating. So interracial and intergenerational are clearly strengths to social movements. The second thing that I think that we can take away from that, and I love the way that you put it, is in uplifting young people, we empower them to understand the significance of what it means to have agency. And agency simply means choice. We all have it. Sometimes our history as African Americans in particular is told in a way that we're robbed of agency. So when we talk about slavery as opposed to enslavement, our narrative becomes Lincoln freed the slaves, when in fact, if you study that history, the slaves, by walking off the plantation and challenging authority, actually precipitated the military crisis, which necessitated the issuance of the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. So that restores agency or choice, action, the ability of the individual to mm-hmm. transform history. And John Lewis, in a very powerful way, demonstrated that through his life. When we lift up young people, we are actually really augmenting and demonstrating the importance of their agency and showing them by that support that we believe that they can be transformational. And I think the last is, we love to tell young people that they stand on the shoulders of giants, but the reality is they are the giants. And when we think about people from history who at young ages were able to do incredible things, again, it's not a new phenomena, but we want to invest them in the idea that in order to be a giant, the very first thing that one has to do is lose that sense of fear. We didn't only lose John Lewis this weekend, we also lost Reverend C.T. Vivian, who to me
yes.
was one of the most fearless civil rights warriors from that period. And really, they embraced Dr. King's embrace of Mahatma Gandhi and the idea that there are two things that make a strong warrior for human rights, and that is an individual who can recognize shared humanity and understand and really privilege the ability to love even your enemies, and then someone who loses the fear to die, who's willing to give the ultimate sacrifice in the cause of that thing, freedom that they hold to be most dear. John Lewis demonstrated that. I think that's what's so powerful about the moment that we're seeing now. But that those are the three things we need to lift up in young people.
Now, Senator Kamala Harris is calling for Mitch McConnell to bring the Voting Rights Act immediately to the Senate floor for a vote and name it the John Lewis Voting Rights Act of 2020. Your thoughts on that?
I think it would be a fitting recognition of a life of service and someone who was so committed to voting rights. You know, I cried in 2013 after Shelby County versus Holder when John Lewis spoke and he said, called on his colleagues within the Congress to recognize the immovable lines that they didn't have to stand in, the violence that they had to face in order to win the right to vote. It was such an eloquent recollection of the sacrifice that so many people made for the sacred right to exercise the elective franchise in this country. And what was so powerful about his statement then resonates with me now is that when you can think about the blood that John Lewis actually spilled to ensure that all Americans would have the right to vote. It only seems fitting, as Senator Harris has said, to name this bill in his honor, to recognize that sacrifice, and hopefully inspire others to see the importance of the right to vote, primarily because people have fought and died for that right. And so therefore, we have all have a duty and a responsibility to go to the polls and fulfill that civic duty.
Thank you so much. We've been talking to Dr. Yohuri Williams from University of St. Thomas, a scholar, a man in our community. He knew John Lewis, and your perspectives are so needed and so timely and so appreciated here at WCCO Radio and on this show. I appreciate your time this weekend. Thank you for sharing those stories and helping us to remember this man who single-handedly changed our country. Tonight, we are paying tribute to Congressman John Lewis, a fallen activist, now an ancestor, a great American hero and an icon right here on the Shaletta Show on WCCO Radio. And I was reading the Washington Post this morning, and I saw David Vondrelli's column, and I knew I had to invite him on. And I am so honored that he is joining us tonight. David, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
The honor is mine. Thank you very much for having me on.
Now, tell us, what was your reaction when you found out that Congressman Lewis had passed on?
Well, of course, we knew he was ill. And so I can't say it was entirely a shock, but it was a blow nonetheless. That generation of men and women who did so much and suffered so much and inspired so many of us through their example and their courage is passing away one by one. And, you know, the same day that Congressman Lewis died, Reverend C.T. Vivian, another of the great Southern Christian Leadership Conference voices, also passed away. And I felt like history's trying to tell us something, that the torch is being passed, and that we need to figure out how to face our times with as much courage and dignity as they face theirs.
And that's what struck me about your article. What is history trying to tell us? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's one of the great moments of my life was I live in Kansas City, though I write mm-hmm. for the Washington Post. And we had an event here a few years ago when the Harry Truman Presidential Library honored Congressman Lewis and his colleague Jim Clyburn from South Carolina, another great figure in the classic civil rights movement of the 1960s. And I had the opportunity to interview the two of them on stage at this dinner and to be with Congressman Lewis. I finally had the chance to ask him how he prepared himself to face the violence that he knew he was going to encounter. With nonviolence and with love, and you know, he gave a beautiful answer that I have in my column. But he ended on the note that he tells young people not to give in to the sea of despair. And I feel like so many people right now are choosing whether they're going to stand up as John Lewis did, or whether they're going to give up. And that's what's so heartening about what's going on in the country right now, as we look at people starting there in Minneapolis and then spreading all over the country, all over the world, standing up and not giving in to despair, and understanding that history is a relay race, and the fact that everything is not finished by one generation only gives you know, passes a job on to the next generations. If that makes any sense.
It does. It does. And you know, this is the thing when you were talking about hope. You know, my 13-year-old son has been to several marches, several protests. We live in Minneapolis, so he's been down to the memorial site. We talk about George Floyd. We've watched the video. He's angry that no matter how good he does in school or what kind of community service he does or how he goes to the Capitol to legislate for children with special needs, that just putting his hand in his pocket and walking down the street could get him shot by police who don't understand him. And so, you know, I plan as a parent to teach him more about John Lewis so that he can have hope. But I'm just interested to know, how did he, you know, you spent time with him, you've had a chance to interview him. How did he maintain that hope? Because just for my son, the thought of that happening is enough to depress him. But yeah. John Lewis was living this. He was being beaten. He was being bit by dogs, and he kept going. Why?
He kept going. He came from desperately poor background and, you know, horrible overt legal official oppression as the son of a sharecropper in southern Alabama. And he had that deep religious faith that so many in the black church have grown up with and have managed to hold on to through difficult times. And it infused him with a genuine hope. He was also, it sounds like your son is as well, a really special young man who had the, you know, the wherewithal and the gumption to reach out. When he was 17 years old, he wrote a letter to Martin Luther King Jr. asking for his help getting into college. You know, that takes a special kind of mm-hmm. young person with a belief in himself and a belief in possibility. And, you know, you used the right word. It's about hope. And there's a beautiful moment when he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor you can receive in the United States, from President Barack Obama. And he said afterwards that if anyone had told him back in the 1960s when he was being beaten for asking for his rights and for respect as a man and a human being, if anyone had told him that he someday would receive that award from an African-American president, he would have said, "You're crazy. You're crazy. That's not possible." So we have to, when I say history's trying to tell us something, you know, the reason it is important to look back at history, because while we feel like we may be walking in place, we're walking forward, and we're making progress, and the work to be done is no more impossible than the work that's already been accomplished.
What when we look back on his legacy, there's so much that's so important: the marches, the sit-ins, the voting rights, how he fought, how he lived, how he died. You know, what's the one thing that comes to mind for you? If you had one thing to teach your children, one thing to teach this country about him that would just embody his boldness and his vision and the movement that he created single-handedly, what would it be?
I think the word I would use is love. He used it all the time. And not an easy, simple, you know, Valentine's Day sugary kind of love, but a love that sees other people, even those who are doing all the wrong things, and mm-hmm. genuinely believes that they can be reached and that they can be touched and they can be changed. He believed in the possibility of human beings to change and to grow and to improve because he loved his fellow human beings. And he, even when he was being beaten, there's a wonderful story about the man who hit him over the head with a wooden crate in the Montgomery bus station when John Lewis was only trying to ride a bus with dignity. And years later, you know, that man came to his office and introduced himself and apologized and asked for forgiveness. And, you know, a lot of us wouldn't have been able to forgive, you know. And what John Lewis said is, I never forgot what happened. I never forgot what he and so many others did. But he was able to forgive because he genuinely loved the possibility of human change.
How was he able to do that? You know, we live in a country now where there is so much hatred. There is so much negativity. There is so, we're all just so down about everything. Nobody wants to get along with anybody. Nobody wants to see the other side. Nobody wants to forgive. We want to hold on to grudges. How was he able to do that? Because he had every right. He was well within his right to hold a grudge and be angry and be upset and be mad. And he didn't do that. We're put out over a tweet or a Facebook post, and here he was bitten by dogs and hit with water hoses and hit over the head with crates and threatened and called every horrible name you can ever think of, and still he led with love.
Yes. Well, I come back to that point. He had a genuine, deep, profound religious faith. As so many of those men and women did and still do. But the going all the way back to the days of abolition, before the Civil War, the first abolitionists, all the way up even to today, this movement for equal human rights has often been led by people of genuine spirituality and religious faith. There's a reason why so many of the great civil rights leaders have a reverend before their names. This was a movement of the church, and while John Lewis, you know, he wasn't a Bible thumper, he wasn't going to clear a crowd of protesters to go stand in front of a church and hold up a Bible. That wasn't his view of religion. It wasn't a political thing. It was a real lived, genuine lived belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, it's so ironic and amazing that, you know, we talk about youth and youth movements. And today, Fellowship Baptist Church, my church, they had a powerful forum with dynamic young people navigating through a double pandemic of racism and COVID-19, and some of our youth and some professors. They all got together for a live Facebook chat with the hashtags Do Something, Foster Safe Conversations, another hashtag, Tough Times Never Last, Tough People Do. I see some John Lewis in these young people, and that's what gives me hope sometimes. You know, and I don't want the legacy of C.T. Vivian to be lost in all this. For some folks, it's the first time that they are hearing his name. Talk to us about him and what he meant to the movement.
C.T. Vivian was, first thing you need to know about him is that Martin Luther King Jr. Said once that C.T. Vivian was the best preacher he ever heard.
Yes.
So when you have Martin Luther King saying that, that you can give a speech, that you've got something on the ball. He was one of the great voices of equal rights. He and John Lewis went way, way back, all the way back to the late 1950s in Nashville, where another man of the cloth, Reverend James Lawson, was leading. Yes. He'd been a Methodist missionary to India, where he learned the teachings of Gandhi, and he brought that knowledge back to the United States and trained soldiers for the nonviolent crusade for human dignity and civil rights in the United States. Both C.T. Vivian and John Lewis were some of the best and most effective people to come out of Lawson's workshops, which, you know, they then went on and founded the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, which John Lewis headed, and C.T. Vivian joined Martin Luther King's organization, Southern Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, and became the head of that organization in his region. And, you know, from that, out of that came lunch counter protests, and then the famous Freedom Rides, and then ultimately that march for voting rights that took John Lewis and others across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965, where he was beaten unconscious simply for asking for the right to vote, which had supposedly been given to him 100 years before.
And, you know, Senator Kamala Harris and others are saying, you know what, you know, thoughts and prayers are wonderful, but we really want to honor this great man. Let's bring it to the floor. She's challenging Mitch McConnell to name it the John Lewis Voting Rights Act of 2020. And she wants to see where everybody stands and how they're going to vote and really solidify his legacy by doing something that he's used his entire life and every breath and fiber of his body to fight for, which is voting rights. Will we see that happening?
I wouldn't it be marvelous if in death John Lewis was just as effective as he was in life. So it's the right thing to do. It would be a tremendous way to honor this man and the movement that he was a part of, because the thing that we see and that I hope your son sees, I know he's representing it. My kids are standing up for it. So many strong young people are carrying this on, that this is not finished work. This is not past history. It needs to be carried forward, and it can be carried forward. And that would be a powerful way to do it.
You know,
one
you
powerful
look
way, not the not the only one.
You just look around at everything that he's done. He's lived the lives and fought the fight of 10 men. And you just sit back and say, wow. You know, you just, you know, every time I go to vote, whenever I stand in line, I could just, you know, I know they probably think I'm crazy out here in Cottage Grove, because every time I go to vote, I can't stop crying, because I can't stop thinking about the sacrifice that he made for me and for my children and for my family. And, you know,
and for white kids like I was when he was doing this. It wasn't just for black Americans. It was for all Americans.
Yeah. And you know, you think about it, you know, now we don't want to be put out to walk down the street. You know, we don't want to, you know, if there's something that, you know, we can't gain for ourselves immediately, then, you know, a lot of us don't want to be a part of it. But he was doing it not for himself. He put his life on the line on a daily basis to speak truth to power when he had none, and he never stopped. He never stopped. Gave up. Where do you think that came from, that he would never give up?
This is why I count the evening that I spent with him as one of the great honors of my life. There are, you know, special people in the world, and it's amazing to get to be in their presence. I think he would say, though, if he heard me say that, that he had nothing that you and I and everybody else, we all have the same tools that he had. We just need to decide to use them. We don't all have to make it our whole lives as he did, but when the times call on us to try to do the right thing, we can. We have it within us. We just have to tap it. So much of what he said, he was a very simple, powerful speaker. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason he was so powerful was his example that he set, but also the clarity with which he said things. So I don't need to speak for him. People, your listeners can go on the internet and hear Congressman Lewis for themselves. But I do think he would really, in this time, he would not want to be built up into some superhero. Mm-hmm. Who was different from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wanted his example to convict all of us of our own responsibilities and possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think it's wonderful that the country has an opportunity to pause and reflect and celebrate and be renewed by his example and by that whole generation, which now largely is gone because Congressman Lewis was one of the youngest of the great leaders of that civil rights crusade of the 1960s.
David Vondrely with The Washington Post, thank you so much for being here on The Shaletta Show. I can't tell you how you've blessed us. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.